Okay, so any points from our previous class? Talking about Visarga. What does Visarga mean?
The secondary creation.
The secondary creation.
Very good. Any other points?
Mahavishnu expands his Garbhodaka Vishnu and enters the universe as the super soul, and the Virat Rupa is considered to be gross with respect, or the subtle body, though it's subtle, but it's considered to be gross with respect to the super soul or the Garbhodaka Vishnu.
Any other points?
When the Lord is in his mystic yoga, in his yoga nidra, he is actually meditating on his pastimes, and these pastimes that he is meditating on are real. It's not like the dream which we see when we are sleeping, but they are actually real pastimes which Lord Garbhodaksha Vishnu is meditating on.
Anything that is spiritual cannot be understood by material means, like Brahma, he went through too much to understand the Lord, and that is not the way to understand. Spiritual should be understood with that.
Bhakya mama vijayanati yavanyascha smitapvataha. I can only be understood in truth by?
Only devotion.
Devotion. Bhakti. Otherwise you cannot perceive Krishna. Ataha Shri Krishna namadi nabhavikarayam indriya. You cannot perceive Krishna through material endeavors. You can only perceive him through devotional service.
Is Hiranyakarupa
have to see in which context the Hiranyamaya is being used, or the term. We'd have to see where it is being used and in what context. To say it's the same thing.
And can we consider that Kala as the internal potential for
Kala, meaning time?
Yeah.
Meaning material time?
Kala, the one that comes
from the glands. That's a material potency, it's not a spiritual potency. It's a material potency. Like that. Originally, there's a Kala Shakti in the spiritual world. And this Kala Shakti is like the expansion of that Kala Shakti, or is the reflection of that Kala Shakti. Time is in the spiritual world, there is time. Ashtakaliya Lila. Krishna has eightfold daily pastimes. But that time does not deteriorate anyone in the spiritual world or anything in the spiritual world. Whereas in the material world, the potency of time deteriorates everything. There is past, there is present, and there is future. So there is. The potency in the material world has a different effect of that. It's a material potency. It's a expansion of Ramadevi, as we saw in the, remember in the Vita, when we looked at the saga and the Lord glands, Ramadevi carried the Lord's glands, gave it to Shambhu, and then Shambhu gave it to Durga, like that. So Ramadevi, at the point where it comes in contact with Shambhu, then she transforms that glance into Kala Shakti. It's her Shakti, her energy. I think we mentioned that back in that.
So at that point of time, it becomes an external potency.
Yeah. So,
does
it say that time is eternal?
It is said like that, yeah.
So if it is material, how could that be eternal? I mean, all material things has a... an end, isn't it? A destruction or an end. So if time is eternal, then how can it be material?
Yeah, so it means that the potency of time means within the Mahatapa, where Mahavishnu is lying, then within that part of the creation of the Lord, then time is existing. That she doesn't exist in that way out in that other part. So then when the Lord takes everything back into himself, then that energy is withdrawn back within himself as well. So just like we say Prakriti or Pradhan is eternal, that is manifest and unmanifest. So the Kala Shakti becomes maybe withdrawn and then comes back out. It is said the Shakti is eternal. Maybe manifest Shakti and unmanifest Shakti, like the Pradhan. Possibly explain it like that. So what other point?
One clarification on this issue. Normally we say that the Sudarshan Chakra represents the time. So the Lord in the spiritual world also has the Sudarshan Chakra. So then within that Kala Shakti, what you are referring to the spiritual world, is that chakra which is holding there in the spiritual world?
Say the last sentence again.
See, the Sudarshan Chakra which is on Lord's finger, that is the Kala. Because when he releases...
No. Kala is a potency of Sudarshan. It's not that Sudarshan is Kala Shakti.
Okay, that's
the point. Sudarshan is a spiritual servant of the Lord. It's one of the Lord's weapons. So it is a spirit. It's a spiritual person. Sudarshan is a pure devotee like that. Sometimes even said to be the Lord himself, like an incarnation. Sudarshana. It's a Shakti of Sudarshana. It's not that he is part of Shakti, potency like that. Any other points?
We raise a point that Lord Brahma is a form of Viratropa, Lord Brahma as well.
Yeah. Any other points?
So, can I ask you, how come we didn't discuss the same point while we're doing the Pradhan and Mahatattva before the chapters for the first exam? Like, it seemed to be like, if you ask the same question next time, you'll try Brahma and Viratropa as well. Is it?
No, because we didn't go as far as Brahma being created. We didn't discuss that in the previous chapters. That only gets discussed in the 8th chapter. Brahma hasn't been mentioned yet.
Okay.
Like that.
So at that point of time, you took this Viratrupa as a normal as a Lord himself, is it? Like a Prabhupada Krishna? Not as Brahma?
Yeah, we didn't explain that feature. Any other points?
I have a question regarding the previous class, right? You said that Brahma is the Lord Virat Rupa is Brahma.
Hmm.
So if it was him, then how could he be going searching? Like didn't we read earlier that he heard the word tapa tapa and then he understood that it means he needs to do austerities and things like that. Yeah?
This was before that. This is when he first appeared. He doesn't remember it when he first appears. We'll explain this tonight, this will be explained tonight. But he didn't remember it at first. When we were first born, we don't remember things. And it's only when we become twice born that we receive knowledge. Like that. But in the beginning, we don't remember. Even Brahma doesn't remember when he comes out. He doesn't remember that he is that subtle identity which he'll need to have in order to create the material world, the Virat Rupa, which is part of his subtle body. That's covered at that point in time. He's still ignorant of that feature of his personality until he becomes enlightened.
That's it. Chaturmukha Brahma and Virat Rupa was Brahma.
Yeah, Acharya say like that. Brahma has three features. Brahma means Brahma, Lord Brahma. Where we say Chaturmukha, four-headed Brahma in this universe. The Virat Rupa itself, the universe, is also said to be the body of Brahma. And Hiranyagarbha means the subtle conception of the Virat Rupa. Means before creation takes place, it becomes his subtle body while he's still in the body of Garbhadaksha and Vishnu. So at that point is also considered to be Brahma, the subtle conception of the Virat Rupa. We'll explain this a little bit more tonight. Any other points?
In text 12, it says that the Lord saw his transcendental body as bluish.
Yeah, that's because of the jivas.
So I thought that his body is always bluish.
No, he saw, when he saw all of the jivas within himself,
yeah,
he saw them as being bluish, blackish colour because of all the sin and all the material desire that they have.
Mm-hmm.
So then he saw that as, but yeah, his body is already blue. But he saw that within himself as also being bluish, blackish.
Okay.
The material desire or the sinful desires of the jivas, he saw that as being bluish, blackish.
Okay.
Any other points?
Can I ask you, at which point of time did Lord Brahma spoke from Samhita?
After he became enlightened. We'll speak about that tonight. Awesome.
Lord Sankarsana spoke Srimad Bhagavatam to Sanat Kumara, and in that disciplic succession we find that Parasana Muni listens and then he passes on to Maitreya through, I think, Pulastya. Now, Parasara Mahamuni has compiled Vishnu Puranam, wherein he says that Lord Vishnu is the source of origin, and that's the Bible for other sampradaya. How is that the same Parasara Mahamuni is conveying to the specific succession when it comes to Maitreya, then we find that it is Lord Krishna is considered to be the origin of the source, whereas in a stage before that we find Parasara Mahamuni is stating that it is in Vishnu Purana, that is, that he is the source. Although both are Vishnu Tattva, there is not much of a difference because it has been an expansion. But in trying to talk in terms of philosophy, we still say one is the origin and the other is not.
Yeah, it's a good question. So each of these shastras or scriptures is eternal. So because they're eternal scriptures, each one of them, then they must be presented as they are, as their content dictates. In other words, the Vishnu Purana is the Vishnu Purana. It is eternally like that. And the Siddhanta, or the understanding that you get from it, must be said that way. So even though the person who is compiling it or writing it or speaking it, maybe he has further realizations by understanding the Bhagavad Purana or the Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna is still Bhagavan Swayam, but Krishna is the source of Vishnu. But still, when presenting the Vishnu Purana, he has to present the Vishnu Purana in that way. He's not going to change the Vishnu Purana, because that is the Siddhanta or the content of the Vishnu Purana. It establishes Vishnu as supreme, which is not incorrect. But if you look at the totality of Vedic literature, if you look at the totality of Bhagavat philosophy, and if you look at the totality of the Absolute Truth, Brahmeti, Paramatmeti, Bhagavaniti, Shatati, then the final Siddhanta, or the final conclusion, is Krishna's to Bhagavan Swayam. But that is presented in the Bhagavad Gita. So that would be a way of explaining it.
But then, which came before and which came later?
The Bhagavad Purana was the final thing which Vyasadeva wrote. They're all eternal scriptures, but in terms of manifestation and so forth, then, aren't they?
But they are eternal, why they are not giving the
because six of the Puranas are meant for those in the mode of ignorance, six are meant for those in the mode of passion, six are meant for those in the mode of goodness. Vishnu Purana is meant for those in the mode of goodness. The Srimad Bhagavatam does not deal with any of the modes of material nature. It's considered to be fully transcendental. Out of all of the Shastras, it is Paramahamsa Samhita. Right, is the ripened fruit of the Vedic knowledge, is the cream of the Vedic knowledge. So therefore it deals differently. But for some personalities, for those who have their eternal relationship with God in Vaikuntha, then they will be led by the Lord within the heart, because Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, I am within the heart of every living entity, and I direct their wanderings. So therefore Krishna will lead those souls who are meant to go back to Vaikuntha. He'll lead them into sampradayas in which the Vishnu Purana is the final Siddhanta or conclusion. But for those who are meant to go back to Goloka, they'll come in contact with the Bhagavad Purana and those and the traditions which see the Bhagavad Purana as being the supreme Siddhanta or the final conclusion, which is the Gaudiya Sampradaya.
As I understand it, the Puranas were written before the Bhagavatam appeared.
Yeah.
So Parashara Muni must have written the Vishnu Purana before the Bhagavatam appeared.
That's what I just said.
Oh, okay.
Any other things?
Probably, it's mentioned in the section that Brahma was meditating for 100 years. Then he got that message of Tapa, and then he got the knowledge of how to create, and I think he got knowledge of his subtle body as being the Virat Rupa. So, Prabhu, but we on the other hand, we also have the information that Brahma's lifespan is 100 years, no? So, how he meditated for 100 years and then he created?
Just means different. It's a different calculation the Bhagavatam's using. So, it's 100 years, but it's not Brahma's years, it's 100 of a different year, that's all. Because, you know, all through the universe, we'll see this in a few chapters, all through the universe you'll see, you know, on the moon planet, 6 months here is one day there. But then when you go higher than the moon planet, then it all starts getting longer and longer. And on Brahma's planet, then all these, like even the moon, the time on the moon is insignificant compared to what's going on in Brahma. So if it's saying 100 years, it's not talking about Brahma's 100 years, because then he'd be dead. So then obviously it's not talking about that. So you just have to change the, it's just a different 100. Any other points?
On that point too, I think it is said 1 second in Brahma Loka is 1 year on earthly planet. One day on Brahma Loka.
It's in the 10th canto. When Brahma goes away for 1 moment, then he comes back and 1 year passed. Okay. It's a long time. Okay, so chapter 8. In the first 9 verses of chapter 8, there is glorification of the disciplic session of the Bhagavatam, how it manifested within this world. Vidura has asked many questions at the end of chapter 7 of the Bhagavatam to Maitreya, and after asking many, many, many questions, 40 or so questions, at the end of that, then Maitreya answers in the beginning of chapter 8 that now I will begin to answer you in terms of the Bhagavad Purana. I will speak to you, Srimad Bhagavatam, to answer all of your questions. So then, the first topic which he enters into when he begins to speak the Bhagavad Purana is the Visarga, or the secondary creation, which begins with Lord Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. Right? So what I'll do now is I'll go through everything. What's in this chapter, in the chapter 8, from verses 10 to 33, is the description of that Visarga, or how the universe manifests from Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, the secondary creation or manifestation. So what I'll do, I'll go through it, and if there's any questions, just ask as we go, and we'll get everything clear. Is this you? Or is this all? Yeah, no, it's from previously, right? Okay. Hopefully, Vish Prabhu will chastise me. So what I'll do, I'll go through the Visarga in detail, and you can ask questions as we go, and then at the end we'll go through verses 22 to 33, which is more or less, we'll cover this anyway, but then we'll just go through it. So if there's any questions, you can ask as we go.
Maybe I'm just want to clarify.
Yeah.
Before that time, the children said that the Visarga starts for what Brahma creates. And here Brahma is not created yet, and you said that the Visarga comes from
secondary creation. So Brahma comes from Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. Yes. So it begins from Garbhadakshaya Vishnu.
But you said that the Visarga means only what Brahma creates.
So that's wrong. Good. So then pretend I never said that. Just keep it. Okay, so who is the first personality involved? Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. Okay. So Visarga begins with Garbo. Gaka. Shai. Vishnu. Now he enters into every universe. The Lord Mahavishnu, when the pores come from his body, they begin to expand. They become surrounded by the different elements, and then at that time they begin to form as separate universes. So these different universes, many separate universes, then Lord Mahavishnu enters into each and every one. He expands himself as Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. So he enters within each universe. This is described like that. This is very good. Okay, so it seems the class is expanding a lot. So it has to be made clear just to all the new students that we started 7:30. So whoever is inviting all of these extra members, please explain what the protocol of the
class.
I don't mind people coming, but please explain to them what the actual outreach protocol is. You'll need a seat? So if you come, you have to come at lunch at 7:30.
Okay. Okay.
Don't come after that. Prabhuji, come at 7:30, huh? Not later on. Okay, so Galadachai Vishnu enters into each and every universe. When he enters into the universe, what is in the universe?
Nothing.
There's nothing within the universe when he first enters. So he enters into the universe and he lies down upon Anantashesh. And when he lies down upon Anantashesh within that universe, because the universe is rather warm at this point in time, and he begins to perspire, and his perspiration fills up half the universe, and that is called the Gava Daka Ocean. Right? So he lies down upon Anantashesh in the Gava Daka Ocean within half the universe. Now, what takes place is that the Virat Rupa comes from him. It expands from him. So the Virat Rupa manifests from him. Right? We explained this on Monday night, how it comes from his form. So the Virat Rupa, he expands the Virat Rupa, and it says that the Virat Rupa lasts for 1,000 celestial years. How long that is exactly, I'm not sure, because the Bhagavatam speaks in different calculations, but for a very long time, this Virat Rupa manifests from his form. Now what he's doing at this point in time is just showing his supremacy. Right? And we explained this in the previous class, because he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's absorbed in Yoga Nidra. Right. He's absorbed in his own spiritual pastimes on an internal platform. And externally, he is manifesting this Virat Rupa, but he's not even conscious of this endeavor. In other words, he's displaying his Aishwarya, or his Vaibhav, or his opulence, or his potency, or his power, that I can manifest an entire universe, right? Because the Virat Rupa is the form of the universe. I can manifest an entire universe, and I'm so powerful, I'm just absorbed in my own internal lila. And I'm not even conscious or aware of what I'm doing. That's how potent I am. Just like when we do something, we have to be fully conscious of the activity. Just like if you cook an offering for the deities. So you have to be fully conscious of everything you're doing. The Lord can do that without even being conscious of it. That's how powerful he is. Right? He's so powerful, he can just be standing at the window just talking to someone in the courtyard. And at the same time, he's there, and the whole offering is being cooked. Not even being cooked, it's just there. Now you come to the kitchen and you say to the Lord, well, where did the offering come from? He just said, I just created it. But we have to cook and we have to do all the, you know, so much work. He just, everything is done. And he's not even conscious. He'd just be talking to someone else. And then he looks around and there's a whole 1 million preparations there. Right? And then he looks back and he looks back again, it's all gone. Right? So powerful, this personality is. Right. So what he does here is in the Bhagavatam says he just lays there. He's just in his mystic slumber, and for 1,000 years the Virat Rupa comes out. Now at that time, what happens is Brahma receives the subtle body of the Virat Rupa, which I mentioned on that previous class. So at this point in time, this is called the Hiranyagarbha, or the subtle body of Lord Brahma. Lord Brahma receives knowledge or an understanding of that Virat Rupa, even though he's still within the body of Galadakshaya Vishnu at this point in time. So he's within the Lord's body, but he has full consciousness or full understanding by the Lord's mercy in his own subtle body of how the Virat Rupa should manifest, how the universe should be constructed. And we saw in the sixth chapter of the third canto, there was the description of how the Virat Rupa is manifest. Yeah. It describes all the different parts. So Brahma has full consciousness of that. And while it's been manifest, the particular jiva within himself, who is Brahma, is allowed to have an understanding of that. That is given to him as his subtle body, so that he can understand how to create in the future. So there's the three features of Brahma. So the universe itself, when it's created, not at this point, at this point in time it's subtle. The Lord just makes the Virat Rupa, it's subtle. It's not the gross form of the Virat Rupa at this point in time. It's just like a subtle form of it. It's like a blueprint or an image of it, like that.
In the sixth chapter, we understood that when intelligence of the Virat Rupa was separately not just manifested, Lord Brahma went and entered into it. To basically the position of intelligence. So does that mean at that point of time he acquired a complete understanding of the Virat Rupa form, and at that point of time it became its subtle body?
It is subtle. You can say it like that. Well, in terms of the description of Jung, it's the first time the Lord manifests it before he puts the jivas into it. At that point in time, then it becomes his subtle body. Okay. So the universe, when it's manifest, finally, when it's actually created, is considered to be his body. That's one form of Brahman. This is Brahman. The whole universe is Brahman. In the sense that it's all created by him. Even though he's a secondary creator, it's considered to be his body and his form. And he knows every single atom of the creation. There's nothing in Brahman's creation he does not know about. He knows exactly what's going on in every planetary system. He's there right now at the top of the lotus flower, right, on Brahma Loka, and he's conscious of what's going on in the mind of every single living entity in the universe. That's how intelligent he is. Not that he's conscious of that all the time. He's not like simultaneously thinking of it. But if he needs to, he can understand everything that's going on here. He understands what we're thinking. That's how potent Brahma is. He knows all of our thoughts. Even though, like, our thoughts go, our life is like that. So it's like a bubble, just like that. That's how significant we are to Brahma. We think we're very significant. We think, oh, you know, I'm so important. You know, I'm the president of America. I'm such an important man. But in, you know, Brahma's scale, it's like, what president was that? Well, there's 250 of them just disappeared. Okay. Like that. No significance like that. So that's how powerful he is. So is this clear about Lord Brahma? His three features. Okay, everyone understands that? Okay, so the Virat Rupa is manifest, and then the Virat Rupa goes back within Galbadaksha Vishnu. He withdraws it back within himself. Then the Bhagavatam describes that he looks within his abdomen, he looks within his body, and he sees all of the jivas are within his own body, and he sees the aggregate totality of all the jivas, all their consciousness, and all of their sinful desires to enjoy separately from God, separately from Krishna. He sees that all the aggregate total of the jivas and their desires is being bluish blackish colour, sinful colour. Kali means star colour, like that. So then what he does, he glances at all the jivas, right, with Kala Shakti. Right? Because the same glance that we saw Mahavishnu use towards the Pradhan, that same glance, that same potency, he then gives to the jivas. Right? He looks at the jivas within himself. So he glances at the jivas. Vishnu, this is Galavakshaya Vishnu, we're talking about. Glances. At jivas. Okay. So he glances within himself and describes that when he glances at them, because all of the 24 material elements we saw when Mahavishnu glanced at Pradhan, then what happened with Pradhan? It became Mahatattva. So it means the 24 elements became manifest. So all of that has been put within the body of Galvadakshaya Vishnu now with the jivas. Everything that Mahavishnu glanced at and turned into Mahatattva, all that is now within the body of Galvadakshaya Vishnu in each universe. And when he glances at the jivas, then his glance contacts the mode of
passion,
which is the most prominent mode within the material world. Goodness and ignorance are not as prominent as the mode of passion. It's the mode of passion which is the most prominent mode. So he glances. And when his glance, Kala Shakti, comes in contact with Rajagun, and then that comes in contact with the jivas, when Rajagun, mode of passion, and Kala Shakti, motion or time, come in contact with the jivas, then it stirs up their desires. right? Their unlimited desires becomes manifest. And then, because their desires are manifest, all of that aggregate desire bursts forth from the navel of Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. And all of those desires, which all that passion, all that desires under the influence of time, of kala, comes out of the body of Mahavishnu as the lotus flower. Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. So, Vishnu glances at the jivas and the lotus flower, sorry, the lotus stem. Manifests.
Sorry, I missed that bit to where you said about the mode of passion. Where does that come? Is within the glass?
No, it's within the Lord. Three modes are within the Lord, but they're dormant.
Okay.
In other words, they're not manifest. Goodness, passion, ignorance, and all the elements, 24 elements, and the jivas, are within the Lord, but kala is what makes it come into motion. Same as when Pradhana's there.
Yeah.
You could say it's like Pradhana. Not exactly Pradhana, it's different, but it's like kind of like Pradhana. It's like Mahatattva, but it's not manifesting.
So
same principle.
Why did only mode of passion get up?
No, all of them. But the mode of passion, when, because goodness is very tranquil. Ignorance is very, I can't be bothered. Right? Ignorance is just like sleep. That's one of the symptoms of ignorance.
Inactivity,
right? And there's no, activity is not the symptom of the mode of goodness. The mode of goodness is shanti, it's very peaceful. So when it contacts the mode of passion, that's when it stirs up a lot of activity. And because the jivas are primarily in the material world, they're primarily under the influence of the mode of passion, when they come in contact with the mode of passion through the timeline, then everything manifests. Everyone can ask, just give me a second. I just need to clarify my points. So what happens is that the Lord, he glances at all of the jiva's desires that manifests out of the abdomen of Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, and he makes the totality of what's coming out, means everything comes out. Means all the 24 elements rush out of him. The jivas rush out, time factor rushes out, three modes rush out. And the Lord forms that in the shape of a lotus flower and a lotus stem. Because the Lord is very creative and very refined and very beautiful. So the Lord does it very wonderfully. You know, if you left it to a man, a human being, you know, God knows what would come out. You know, it'd be like that building over there. They just
built. Two horns.
Yeah, it could be anything. Use your imagination. Just like, you know, what do we build when we build something? You know, they build that, what's that big one called?
Eureka.
We also have the other one, the bigger one.
Eureka,
yeah, so they build that, right? Not like a lotus flower. Not beautiful. Right, just big and steel and everything. But when the Lord does it, it comes out like a lotus flower. Even though it's like this totally passionate, sinful, materialistically motivated desire, but the Lord organizes it all very nicely for everyone. Right, and forms it as a beautiful lotus flower, a beautiful lotus stem, which goes from his navel and which Brahmana appears in.
Prabhu, is it, that's my speculation,
yep.
Is it that Garbhodakshaya Vishnu looks at the mode of passion because at this point nothing is created for maintaining, which is the function of mode of goodness, and nothing to be annihilated, which is the function of mode of ignorance?
Yeah, everything gets touched by the by Kala Shakti,
yes.
But it's as you're saying, passion is what
creates. At this point you're creating. And also, it's not clear to me why Viratrupa appears out and appears back. Is this different Viratrupa? Because this Viratrupa becomes manifested by the desires of living entities.
No, it's the same Virat, but the point is that the second time it comes, everything else comes with it. The first time, it's just like a subtle Virat. The jivas are not within it. You know, it's not like he sees the Virat, he sees the way it should be. He sees, because the Virat is the body, right? There's hands, there's a face, right? There's a chest, there's legs, all those things are there. He sees the body, but it's not that all the jivas and all the demigods and everything are within it. It's just the body itself. Just the subtle form of the Virat.
So
that's
what's
all.
The purpose of Virat Rupa coming out and coming back?
The Lord is showing off. That's the first reason. Right? Because he's just showing his potency.
Yeah.
And he also gives Brahma the opportunity to understand the how to create. That's the second reason.
The first appearance of Virat Rupa. Where is
Brahma
then in that picture?
I said it already, that Brahma was within the body of the Lord.
So he can see that from the within
the body? He's asleep. He's asleep. The Lord allows him to understand it. It's like, but he puts it within, he doesn't wake him up and show him. Right? He just allows it to become his subtle body. It's like he kind of must have a dream or something like that. And he understands, oh, this is how it all should be. And the Lord places that within his subtle body. So when he comes out, it's within him. The consciousness of, he gets a vision of that.
He doesn't get the vision when he comes from the lotus or from the lotus.
I'll explain that now. Okay. Any other points?
What happened to those demigods and jivas who were created the first time when the plants came in contact with Mode of Goodness? So did
the prototypes?
Yes.
Before, when Mahavishnu went the first time. Yes. They stay within the coverings of the universe. They're the deities of the coverings of the universe. Because you remember when Mahavishnu glanced and Pradhan turned into Mahatanva. And then those deities became the prototype or the original deities of those, like there was a deity for earth, there's a deity for water, there's a deity for fire, for mind. So they all manifested like prototypes. But they didn't know what to do, how to put it all together. But then the Lord, they prayed to the Lord gave them intelligence how to manifest it, how to organize it, for Gavdakshari Vishnu. So then they like send it all into the universe to be used, all those elements get sent into the universe. And they stay within the coverings as like the presiding deities of those coverings. And they protect like jivas from coming in or out, or they like give permission for jivas to come in or out, or mainly they keep everyone in at that point.
So when the Virat Rupa goes back into the body of Garbhodaksha Vishnu, those elements also with it goes in
the when the first time and the
second time? Now. When the Virat Rupa gets absorbed into the body of Garbhodaksha Vishnu.
Yeah. Then, yeah, no, they're outside of the universe. See, the universe is like an egg, and then surrounding the universe is the earth, the water, fire. So they're in that area, the coverings. Does that make sense? Yeah, that's what I mean. Someone else had a point?
I have a question. Is the demigods subordinate to Brahma?
Just demigods?
The demigods we talked about now.
Those ones? Yeah. They're even beyond Brahma. I think Brahma is one of those original. His prototype is one of those original. It says that. It says that, I think it's the deity in charge of the mode of intelligence was Brahma. I think that's what it said. Like that. Because Lord Shiva was in charge of false ego. Like that. And then, I'm sure Brahma was mentioned at that point in time. So I think there's an original Brahma outside of the universe, which this one becomes like a secondary one. Who?
Probably when Mahavishnu had glanced and, you know, false ego combined with the different modes to create all the different subtle and gross elements. So all that was actually, everything had manifested at that time, you know, earth, water, fire, ether, because of which the coverings of the universe came. And then when Garbhodaksha Vishnu entered into each and every universe, everything again becomes unmanifest and goes inside him again. How is that?
Yeah, the elements go within his body. Mahavishnu glances at Pradhan. Pradhan becomes Mahatattva. The demigods become surround Mahatattva at that point in time, right, the original demigods. They don't know what to do. They pray to the Lord, right? Then he creates the universes. He enters in each universe as Virat Rupa to show them like this is how it should be manifest. And then somehow all those elements get placed within the body of Garbhodaksha Vishnu. So maybe those demigods have something to do with them getting placed within the body. Does that make sense?
So when those demigods are praying, they are praying, we don't know what to do, but they are just controllers of the coverings of the universe. No, what they have to do about the creation within the universe?
Not so much, they don't have so much to do with what goes on in the universe, but It says at that point in time, outside of the universe, all of the elements were mixed. Like earth, water, fire, like there's a covering of earth, there's a covering of water, there's a it was all mixed up. And they didn't know, like, you know, what is supposed to go where, which is the order, like that. They prayed and then the Lord showed them.
So that means simultaneously right now the 24 elements are present there also as well as within Garbhodakshaya Vishnu also.
Yeah, same. Just on a smaller scale, that's all.
What is the significance of lotus flower over here?
It's a symbol of beauty. Like that Prabhupada says in one of the purports that we've read recently, he said lotus flower is like a symbol of beauty within this world. Most beautiful of the Lord's creations. So when the Lord creates something, it's very beautiful and wonderful because the Lord is showing His. It's the way the Lord does things. He's not gross. He's a very refined person like that. So. Someone else had a point.
Is this description based on Shiva Bhagavatam or the Bhagavatam?
Both. At this point in time, Prabhupada says in the introduction of the Bhagavatam. In the introduction of the Bhagavatam, there is the life and precepts of Mahaprabhu. Lord Chaitanya gives like...
Yes.
Prabhupada gives in the beginning, he gives like a... I think he calls it life and precept of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Yes. So in that, it says that Mahaprabhu went to South India and he found Brahma Samhita and Krishna Kanamrita. And Prabhupada says there, in the introduction, Prabhupada says the Brahma Samhita is like a... like something, I can't remember how Prabhupada said it, said something like a synopsis of the Bhagavatam.
Treatise,
yeah. Like a treatise or a commentary, Prabhupada says something like that, of the Bhagavatam. Right? So the Brahma Samhita allows us to understand the Bhagavatam. And Tamal Krishna Maharaj taught his course on the Bhagavatam based on Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's commentary, like that. And in that, most of what I've learned about the creation is based from that. That will come out as a book, hopefully, in the next 12 months or so. So, based on that, that course that I did, that's how I'm understanding how... Because the Bhagavatam sometimes is a little hard, unless you have all the commentaries, or unless you have the Brahma Samhita commentary. So, it's based on both. It's based on the Bhagavatam. There's some parts which I'm putting in. I'm just trying to make it all clear for everyone, as much as I understand it.
So you said the glance of Garbhodakshaya Vishnu is similar to the glance of Mahavishnu. So there we had four primary energies. So here also the same primary energy, four energies are there in the glance of Garbhodakshaya Vishnu.
Yeah. Yeah. Ichcha, Jnana,
Kriya.
Yeah. Same. Same, exactly the same. But same person, same glance. Just different scale now. Now it's come down to a smaller scale, even less. Okay, so Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, Virat Rupa comes out, glance at the jivas, the lotus stem manifests. Right. So the lotus stem manifests, and then on top of the lotus flower appears
Swayambhu.
Swayambhu means
self-manifest.
So he manifests there. Lord Brahma is there, sitting on top. Lotus stem manifests. Then we'll say Brahma manifests. Okay, so Lord Brahma manifests. Now Lord Brahma manifests. But when he is born on top of the lotus flower, he is born within ignorance. He doesn't understand what his purpose is. He asks questions. Right? We read that in the previous verses. And he asks questions. Where am I? Who am I? What is my source? He doesn't understand what his purpose is. So then, he begins to explore his surroundings. He understands, well, I'm on top of a lotus flower. Where does this lotus flower originate from? I must find my origin. Prabhupada points out this is the point of human life. Atato Brahma, Jigyasa. This is the beginning of Vedanta Sutra.
You must, now that you're a human, you must inquire into what is the absolute truth. What is my origin? So then he goes down into the stem of the lotus and he travels all the way down towards Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. But he cannot reach the Lord because the Lord is transcendental. The Lord is adhoksaja, which means he is beyond the material nature. He is a spiritual personality. You cannot perceive spirit with material faculties. So therefore, he goes into the lotus, he travels all the way down, he cannot reach the Lord, he cannot perceive the Lord. And he meets the Lord's form of chakra, Sudarshan chakra, which is the Kala Shakti. And he becomes fearful of time, he becomes fearful of Sudarshan chakra, and he comes back to the top of the lotus flower. Now at the top of the lotus flower, Lord Brahma is there, and being confused and being unsure of what to do, at this point in time, it is pointed out that in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there is more than one description of Lord Brahma appearing. And you'll see, and in Brahma Samhita, there's a description of him appearing. So back in chapter 9 of Canto 2, we heard about Lord Brahma appearing. Remember at that point when he came out like that? And now we're hearing it again, Canto 3, chapter 8, and then you hear about it in Brahma Samhita also. But each time the description is slightly different. So the point is that it is not the same Brahma every time. And the kalpas may also be different. Right? In other words, it may be like different days of Brahma, maybe different lifetimes of Brahma, maybe different more Brahmas. So the principles are the same. What happens, the principles are the same, but the details are different. Because there's not the same personality. Just like in chapter 9 of Canto 2, he meditates and he has darshan of Vaikuntha. Right? Vaikuntha means Lord Narayan. He has darshan of Lord Narayan. But then in Brahma Samhita, Lord Brahma becomes enlightened and he has darshan of Goloka. So it's a different Brahma, like that. So here also it's a different description. If you read Canto 2, chapter 9, if you read Canto 3, chapter 8, and you read Brahma Samhita, descriptions are not the same. But the principles are the same. So this must be understood at this point in time.
Oh.
Yeah.
At the end of, how do I say it? After actually Brahma sleeps during the night, when he comes out in the form of the, you know, this lotus flower on the abdomen of Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, and he just, you know, just manifests. That's how every day of Lord Brahma starts.
Every day, not every day.
Not every day. This is just the beginning of the creation.
Yeah, on the first time he's totally confused. Other times he just wakes up and he sees that the universe is flooded. Like that, but he knows what needs to be done.
Srila Prabhupada writes in one of the purports of the earlier verses that this is not a total dissolution, but this is a partial dissolution.
Yeah.
That's how he just described. So, you know, I really got confused about whether this is the beginning of the second day when really Lord Brahma comes on the top of the lotus flower.
So that's how sometimes the Bhagavatam sounds confusing. Mm. And that's how sometimes, you know, it's confusing for us to study it, to understand it, to explain it, to teach it. So it's confusing. Because what seems to be being described, the Lord looks within his body.
Right.
So it's like it's the beginning of the universe. But Prabhupada does make that statement.
Yes.
Because there are, when he goes to sleep every night, he wakes up and he does have to create the universe again. Because most of the, not all the universe, most of the universe is destroyed during his nighttime. Right? So therefore, you know, there's statements there. And the Bhagavatam does that all the time. Bhagavatam doesn't always speak sequentially or categorically, sometimes, or systematically. Sometimes it jumps and it cuts and like that. So then what we try to do is when we study it, and we study all the things, the materials which are available to us, and we try to bring it together like that. But some of these statements are contradictory and confusing.
Because it all started with them. All the three words were submerged in the water.
Yeah.
And I was thinking this is the night of Brahma. And here Brahma is coming.
Yeah, because it more or less says at the beginning of this chapter that this is a description of that taking place. It's like when he wakes up and there's a partial. But then it seems the description is when he first comes. So we're describing from when he first comes. And then in between times, he only has to do a partial job. He doesn't have to do the total of that song. So, Lord Brahma manifests. Now when he manifests, he goes through three principles every time. When he manifests. What are those three principles? Right, we discussed this last time when we did the ninth chapter, in the second chapter. What is the first principle he goes through?
Ignorance.
Yeah, he's born in ignorance. Very good. He's born in ignorance. Right. The second principle is? He performs austerity. Shall I write austerity or tapasya? Okay, tapasya. Everyone knows what tapasya means? Tapasya.
Enlightenment.
And? Then he becomes enlightened. Okay, so these three principles he goes through every time that he manifests in this world. So he manifests, he's on top of the lotus flower, he's dived into the lotus flower, and then he's come back to the top of the lotus flower. And then, at this point in time, he is in ignorance. He doesn't understand what is his purpose. So then, it describes in the ninth chapter of the second canto, he hears the sound of the water, the waves of the water, in the navel of Galvadakshaya Vishnu, tapping against the lotus flower, the stem of the lotus flower, making the sound, tappa, tappa. So he hears tapa and then he understands I must perform divine austerity, tapasya. So what he does, he begins to perform tapasya, or he begins to meditate on the Lord. Now, it is pointed out that what takes place, now what I'll do now, I'll jump to the Brahma Samhita. And I'll use the description of creation for the Brahma Samhita because it's very wonderful. And it makes sense. And I'll go to the Brahma Samhita's description at this point of time. So we'll take that particular Lord Brahma and the Brahma Samhita like that. So Lord Brahma hears the sound of the waves and he understands he should perform tapasya. Now, what happens is that when the devotee performs tapasya, then he can take initiation. Right? You can only take initiation after you have performed sufficient tapasya or austerity, right? As a devotee, you must perform austerity or sacrifice for the pleasure of Guru and Krishna. So when you perform sufficient austerity, then you get second initiation, right? Second initiation means you become dvija, means you become twice born, and you receive Brahma Gayatri, you receive Gayatri Mantra. But in order to get second initiation, you must perform austerity, tapasya, right? Sacrifice for the pleasure of Guru and Krishna. So at this point in time, Lord Brahma, he begins to perform meditation and austerity, and then it says that divine Saraswati appears before him. This is not his wife, right? Lord Brahma's wife, Saraswati, it is not her, it is divine Saraswati. Or in other words, it is Lakshmi Devi. It is the goddess of fortune, Lakshmi Devi. So she appears before him in the Brahma Samhita and she gives him initiation. Because he's performed austerity, he's purified his consciousness through tapasya. So then he receives initiation. And she gives him mantra. At the time of initiation, when you become twice born, right? Then when you become dvija, what we call, in ISKCON we call it second initiation, dvija, when you become
he received Gayatri Mantra. So she gives him Gayatri Mantra. So for those of you who have Gayatri Mantra, the sixth mantra, right, which is mentioned in the Brahma Samhita, shall I mention it? Because normally what happens is Gayatri, you do not normally say it in public. Right? We do not normally say it out loud. But it is written there in the Brahma Samhita. And Prabhupada writes it in his own books. He writes the Gayatri Mantra, so it's not the secret. So shall I say it or not say it? Shall I say it? It doesn't mean if I say it, you are initiated. It doesn't mean you are now Brahma, so then you can chant it. You have to receive it from Guru. Right? Otherwise it doesn't have potency. So I'm only saying it in terms of academic understanding. I'm only saying this in terms of education. I'm not saying this. Normally we don't say it, but I'm just saying it because it's we're doing it properly. We're doing it as a course, right? So clean Krishnaya, Govindaya, Gopi Jambalaya, Swaha. So he receives this mantra from Lakshmi, from Saraswati, divine Saraswati. And then he meditates on that mantra. Now in Brahma Samhita, Lord Brahma within Brahma Samhita is aspiring for reaching his self-realized identity or his siddha swarup or his eternal constitutional position in relationship to Krishna, or the swarup that he is desiring is to be a manjari or to be a maidservant of the gopis in conjugal ras, right? In madhurya ras, shringara ras, right? So that is the desire of Brahma in the Brahma Samhita. You'll see in the 9th chapter of the 2nd canto, it's a different Brahma. Brahma wants to go to Vaikuntha. It's a different mood. But in Brahma Samhita, he desires to be a maidservant of the gopis, which is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu emphasized. Which is what, that's why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu very much rallies the Brahma Samhita when he found it in South India. He copied it and he took it back to his devotees in Jagannath Puri. So, he desires to be a maidservant. So he chants this mantra. Clean Krishnaya, Govindaya, Gopi Jambalabhaya, Swaha. Meditates on that mantra to become a manjari. And he meditates on the 64 arts, which are mentioned in the Nectar of Devotion, which Krishna learned from Sandipani Muni, the 64 arts which Krishna learned, in order to serve Radha and Krishna.
What is 64?
See, if you read in Nectar of Devotion,
yeah,
it says that Krishna has like the 64 qualities, yeah, 64 arts. So these 64 arts are there, which can be used in the service of Krishna. So he meditates on performing those different services to Radha and Krishna. Radha and Krishna are situated on a, this is all described in the Brahma Samhita, on a lotus petal, in the lotus flower. And the gopis and the mandiris are surrounding as the filaments and the petals surrounding Radha and Krishna. So he's meditating on serving Radha and Krishna like that. And this is his meditation while he is chanting that mantra. Right? That is called Rag Anuga Bhakti. So he meditates on chanting this mantra and he meditates on becoming a divine maidservant of Radha and Krishna. Then what happens when he's when he becomes very advanced in his meditation, he hears the sound of Krishna's flute. This is like his further initiation. So it is described that when you become more advanced, then Lord Krishna will make arrangements for you to come in contact with Guru or Vaishnavas who will lead you to higher levels of spiritual advancement. So therefore he's meditating, and if he gets to the level, it doesn't say, but I would imagine, he gets to the level of asakti. So he gets to a very advanced level of spiritual realization, and then he actually hears Krishna's flute. But he's not perfect yet. He can't fully see Krishna, he cannot fully perceive Krishna fully, but he hears the flute. And as the sound of the flute enters his 8 ear holes and enters into his heart, it becomes manifest within his heart because the sound of Krishna's flute is not different from Gayatri mantra. So it becomes manifest in his heart as the 7th mantra in Gayatri mantra. Clean Kama Devaya Vidmahe Pushpapanaya Dimihi. Yeah. Tanno Nangaha Prachodaya.
I'm not allowed to say that one either. But this is for the purpose of education. This is the seventh mantra. So this mantra, when he hears Krishna's flute and he meditates on the sound of Krishna's flute, because that mantra is non different from the sound of Krishna's flute, it becomes manifest in his heart. And then he keeps meditating and meditating on the sixth mantra and the seventh mantra together. And then by meditating and meditating, then what happens? He develops prema. He gets this third level, which we mentioned here, which is enlightenment. In other words, he develops prema. And when he develops prema, what happens? Then the Loka Vrindavan manifests in front of him. And then in the 29th verse, he says, Chintamani. Right? And he begins to chant these mantras. So these mantras, which are mentioned in what we call the Brahma Samhita, Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami, in these mantras, which go from verse 29, then at that point in time, that is when he actually has darshan of Goloka. And what he describes from verse 29, when we chant these mantras, Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham, this is actually what he is seeing in Goloka. You'll see, he first describes. And maybe one day we'll do a course on Brahma Samhita.
Yes,
maybe in January when we have Tom Bong from the Bhagavata course. I was talking to Mayor Priya about that, like that. The other night we're talking about it because you have summer school. And then some devotees always ask me, they say, Prabhu, why don't you have courses? Why do we stop for 3 months? So we have to stop in November because actually we can have courses in November, but you have to come with me. To bring Dharma. If you want to come, then we'll have courses there. And in December we usually don't, because usually we do book distribution marathon for a Prabhupada's project. And in January we usually have a month off to recover from the other months. So then but some of the readers have been saying, why don't we have some short course? So maybe one day we'll do Brahma Samhita or Madhurikanam Bini or Harinanji Dharma or something like that. Because Brahma Samhita is wonderful. What he sees when he has that vision, it's very majestic. We can't explain it now because it takes a long time. It's very intricate. But basically, it comes under this category. He becomes enlightened. This is what matters. Then after he becomes enlightened, he understands fully how, and at that point in time, then he has remembrance within his subtle body of the Virat Rupa. Right? So we can write that down. How should we write this? He develops the ability to create. Right? He has memory. How should we write it? Remembrance of the subtle body. Okay. So he has remembrance of the subtle body. Remembrance of, or right, how to create. How to create. So he remembers how I shall create. So at that point in time, when he becomes fully enlightened by Krishna, he has remembrance within his consciousness, how I shall, he has remembrance of the Virat Rupa within his subtle body. All the remembrance comes back. He can understand how the universe is meant to be created, and then he begins to create the universe. And we'll see in the next few chapters what happens when he begins to create. The four Kumaras come out. They will not create for him. He becomes angry. Shiva manifests, right? Mm-hmm. Then he has trouble from Shiva. He says to Shiva, go and meditate. Right? Because when Shiva comes out, he's angry like this. It's a personification of his anger. So he says, you just go and meditate. Otherwise, we'll call you when it's time to destroy the universe. Right? Because otherwise you're going to cause big problems. So then he keeps creating, problems come. Because people won't create for him. And then finally he creates Swayambhu Manu. Right? Manu becomes manifest, and then Manu begins to create. So all this will come in the next few chapters. Very amazing how the universe begins to manifest. So we've heard of Saga, we've heard of Visaga, this is Visaga,
And the next topic is?
No, obviously it's not the next, but
Stana.
Yeah, Stana. Stana means when the planetary system is manifest, then what takes place? Right? So actually there's a bit more visarga you could say, because they have to come. But then it describes how Manu, Swayambhu Manu, begins to manifest the universe, and so the Stana begins to take place. Right? And then portion of the Lord's protection, they come on the screen in a few chapters when Varaha appears to protect the earth and so forth. And Utiya means the creative impetus, how all the different generations and dynasties begin to manifest like that. And then what is next?
Manvantara.
Manvantara means the Manu. Well, that, actually that's Swayambhu Manu, when the Manvantara comes. And then Ishanukata, right? The Lord's pastimes with his devotees. Prahlad Maharaj is predicted he will come by that. And Nirodha means the destruction by that. Mukti means how to become liberated. And Ashraya is the 10th canto, which means the Lord himself. So all this would become. So this is basically what takes place. This is the creation. Okay. Does this make sense to everyone?
Yeah.
Makes sense? We'll go over it again in the next few weeks. And it might be on the next exam. There might be some questions about it on the next exam.
A bit confusing.
Huh?
A bit confusing.
Imagine how Lord Brahma feels. You need four heads to work this one out.
Why is he meditating on the pastimes of Golok, Vrindavan and all that? Because, or rather, if he achieved Krishna prema, then why is he still creating Prabhu? I'm not able to understand.
But that's his service. That's his service. The whole point of him manifesting is to create the universe. That's his point. But when he is on top of Lotus Flight, he doesn't understand. He doesn't understand. He says, why am I here? What is my purpose? He doesn't understand what his purpose is. But when he becomes fully enlightened, now he's a pure devotee. Now he can create, and as he says, if you go back to the 9th chapter of the 2nd canto, he prays to the Lord, now I'm about to engage in this very passionate activity of creation. Please do not allow me to forget you while I'm doing my service. Because now I'm going to be dealing with the material energy very closely. Please do not allow me to forget you while I'm doing my service to you. So that's why.
At this point in time, why are we meditating on this Siddha Deya and all? The ideal meditation would be to meditate on how to create and all, no? So.
Yeah, but first he has to become he has to become perfect in his sadhana. Because he's also the Sampradayic Acharya, he's the first personality of the universe. So he's teaching all of us what is the goal of life first. What, you know, what's the most important thing? Yeah, the creation is not the most important thing. The most important thing is to become Krishna conscious. So he's showing us how to become Krishna conscious. Like that. How to perfect our human life. Right? How to make our life perfect. And then he does his service, and then he shows us how to do our service in the perfect way, not forgetting Krishna. Okay. Makes sense.
And is it also because that Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradaya Mandiri Bhava is stressed so much, because the original Brahma of this lifetime of Brahma which we are in is a Mandiri? That is why the Mandiri Bhava is stressed?
It's stressed because Mahaprabhu is stressed. That's why it's stressed. But then Mahaprabhu, because there are different Brahmas, but Mahaprabhu, when he found Brahma Samhita, then that particular Brahma, he is in Madhurya Ras. So Mahaprabhu took that and made a copy and he gave it to everyone in Jagannath Puri. He said, copy it and distribute it amongst the Vaishnavas. So this is the most important scripture. Like that. No more questions. Sorry. Any questions, ask me on Monday night, because we have to finish. No, sorry. Okay. Verse 22. At the end of Brahma's 100 years, when his meditation was complete, he developed the required knowledge. And as a result, he could see in his heart the Supreme within himself, whom he could not see before with the greatest endeavor. So in this one verse in the Bhagavatam, it just describes what we took about 40 minutes to describe. Right? Not that, but just that. Remember I went through that whole section of how he, Saraswati, he meditated Saraswati. So all of that, in the Bhagavatam, in this chapter, it doesn't mention the details. So that's why I included the Brahma Samhita, just to give us more understanding of what took place. Brahma could see that on the water there was a gigantic lotus-like white bedstead. So you see in the Brahma Samhita, you see in the 9th chapter of the 2nd canto, when the Brahma in the 9th chapter of the 2nd canto meditates, what does he see? He sees Vaikuntha, right? And then you'll see in the Brahma Samhita, what does he see? He sees Goloka. And here it says that this Lord Brahma sees Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. He has full darshan. It doesn't mention what he sees in terms of his higher realizations. But he is able to see the spiritual form of the Lord now. So whether he's meditating on, it's the one who meditated on Vaikuntha or Goloka, but now he can see the Lord, so he can also see Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. He can look down to the bottom of the universe and he can see Garbhadakshaya Vishnu laying there. Whereas previously he looked down and all he could see was water. But now he can see the Lord lying on the water. Right? So he's got spiritual vision now. Like that. Brahma could see that on the water there was a gigantic lotus-like white bedstead, the body of Seshanag, on which the personality of Godhead was lying alone. The whole atmosphere was illuminated by the rays of the jewels projecting the hood of Seshanag, and that illumination dissipated all the darkness of those regions. The luster of the transcendental body of the Lord mocked the beauty of the coral mountain. The coral mountain is very beautifully dressed in the evening sky, but the yellow dress of the Lord mocked its beauty. There is gold on the summit of the mountain, but the Lord's helmet, bedecked with jewels, mocked it. The mountain's waterfalls, herbs, etc., with a panorama of flowers, seemed like garlands. But the Lord's gigantic body and his hands and legs, decorated with jewels, pearls, tulsi leaves, and flower garlands, mocked the scene on the mountain. His transcendental body, unlimited in strength and breadth, occupied the three planetary systems, upper, middle, and lower. His body was self-illuminated by unparalleled dress and variegatedness, and was properly ornamented. The Lord showered his lotus feet by raising them. His lotus feet are the source of all awards achieved by devotional service free from material contamination. Such awards are for those who worship him in pure devotion. The splendor of the transcendental rays of his moonlight toenails and fingernails appeared like the petals of a flower. He also acknowledged the service of the devotees and vanquished their distress by his beautiful smile. The reflection of his face, decorated with earrings, was so pleasing because it dazzled with the rays from his lips and the beauty of his nose and eyebrows. O my dear Vidura, the Lord's waist was covered with yellow cloth resembling the saffron dust of the Kadamba flower, and it was encircled by a well-decorated belt. His chest was decorated with the Sri Vatsa marking and a necklace of unlimited value. As a sandalwood tree is decorated with fragrant flowers and branches, the Lord's body was decorated with valuable jewels and pearls. He was the self-situated tree, the Lord of all others in the universe. And as the sandalwood tree is covered with many snakes, so the Lord's body was also covered by the hoods of Ananta. Like a great mountain, the Lord stands as the abode for all moving and non-moving living entities. He is the friend of the snakes because Lord Ananta is his friend. As a mountain has thousands of golden peaks, so the Lord was seen with the thousands of golden helmeted hoods of Ananta Nag. And as a mountain is sometimes filled with jewels, so also his transcendental body was fully decorated with valuable jewels. As a mountain is sometimes submerged in the ocean water, so the Lord is sometimes submerged in the water of devastation. Lord Brahma, thus looking upon the Lord in the shape of a mountain, concluded that he was Hari, the personality of Godhead. He saw that the garland of flowers on his chest glorified him with Vedic wisdom, in sweet songs, and looked very beautiful. He was protected by the Sudarshana wheel for fighting, and even the sun, moon, air, fire, etc., could not have access to him. When Lord Brahma, the maker of the universal destination, thus saw the Lord, he simultaneously glanced over creation. Lord Brahma saw the lake in Lord Vishnu's navel, and the lotus flower, as well as the devastating water, and the drying air and the sky, all became visible to him. Lord Brahma, thus being surcharged with the motive passion, became inclined to create, and after seeing the five causes of creation, indicated by the personality of Godhead, he began to offer his respectful prayers on the path of the creative mentality. So on Monday night we'll begin chapter 9. Chapter 9 will begin to describe how the creation begins to manifest from Lord Brahma's passionate creative impetus. Like that. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jāya.